Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing on early Friday morning. Joining us from the center in Philadelphia, where the 76ers won Game 3 in a remarkable evening for a number of reasons on Thursday night over the New York Knicks, Tim Bontemps.
Hello, everybody, from the place in the NBA where things are never boring.
That's true. Stay away from Kelly Oubre out on those streets when you leave there tonight. Joining us from Dallas, Texas, where the very interesting Mavericks-Clippers series has shifted, heading for Game 3 on Friday night, Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners. Always a pleasure to be here. Enjoyed the podcast without me, though. Thought Cass was much better than you two boys on that one.
No argument here.
Cass was trooper, 2 in the morning. All right, so this was an all-time performance from Joel Embiid, Bontemps. First off, he had a game where he scored 50 points, his greatest ever scoring playoff game, where he took 19 shots.
It's crazy. The fewest shots in a 50-point playoff performance ever.
The second fewest in any game ever.
What was the fewest?
Adrian Dantley scored 50 on 17 shots in 1980. I'm trying to pull it back up because I had it in my phone.
Before the three-pointer.
I bet you took 32 free throws.
Kyrie had a game where he did it in 19, and there was one other player. It's been a long night, so I apologize for not having
this immediately ready. That is important.
I'm pulling it up right here. But yeah, he was second fewest ever behind Dantley.
Wow.
That would have been a good one for the Wiz of the Quiz, but he apparently retired.
Yeah.
I was going to use it for Wiz of the Quiz, but I didn't have time to set it up because it's been a day.
All right. So there's been some discussion in the last couple of days about Joel and the fact that his left eye wasn't apparently blinking during game 2. And there was speculation about that and all kinds of stuff. And that explains why he had his head down when he did that interview at his locker, which he was criticized for. But I think you even might have mentioned on the podcast, and if you did on the pod, you mentioned it behind, that you thought maybe he hurt his eye.
Well, it looked like he got poked in the eye in the first game with the series, which is what I thought it was. And he's worn sunglasses ever since then.
Right. He was a friendly fire thing in the game one where Oubre ran into him. Mm-hmm. But in this game, everybody's watching. I'm watching every time he goes to the foul line, whether his left eye is blinking. It was not. And then there was a couple of times where he was yelling at the officials or yelling in general, which is a whole nother event in this game, which we'll talk about in a second, where it appeared like the left side of his mouth was not moving. And this became extremely concerning to me because obviously that indicates a more significant problem. And while this is happening, the guy is raining in three-pointers with guys standing. I swear to God, he made 2 three-pointers in this game tonight where there were Knicks players that were under his arms, where they were guarding him under his arms, and he just shot it. He didn't shoot it over the top of their head. He put the ball over their head. He's raining in these threes, and the left side of his face is frozen. And I'm like, what the hell? And this guy's playing unbelievable basketball. Meanwhile, he's moving great. He's like running through screens. He's running out to the corner to challenge shots. Bontemps, then after the game, Adrian Wojnarowski reports that he's dealing with Bell's palsy, which is a temporary but scary condition that happens that does this. It basically paralyzes half of your face. It can last 48 hours to a couple of months or a couple of weeks.
Can also last a lot longer than that.
Well, yes, but most of the time it's not. But anyway, so please take us into what Joel said after the game before we examine what happened on the court, because Jeff Stotts, who keeps an injury database in street clothes, is his Twitter handle. He said this is actually the third recorded time he's had of a player missing time due to Bell's palsy. I had no recollection, including Zach Randolph missed time. I had no recollection of it. This is a complete, I've heard of it. I've never heard of an NBA player having this and playing with it. This is stunning in general. If he had 4 points, it's stunning he played with it. He has one of the games of his life with it. It is an absolutely jaw-dropping set of circumstances.
Yeah, and he's been playing with it for over a week. He said this started before the Miami game, the play-in game, when he obviously wasn't moving. We talked about how he wasn't moving around great in that game and obviously summoned it at the end to get him through it. but he wasn't feeling great in that game. He obviously wasn't feeling great in the games in New York. He's wearing these sunglasses. He's dealing with all this stuff. He's still dealing with the knee. He's wearing big ass brace on his knee. And, you know, he'd been hobbling around at times in the first couple of games. He could look great, like you said, moving around today. He said that he had some migraines at first and didn't think it was much more than that, then realized it was this. Said, based on conversations that I've had, it could be weeks or it could be months. He then joked, I hope it stays like this because I've got a beautiful face. I don't like it when my smile is going the other way, which is a pretty good line. I asked him if it's impacted his vision, which he said yes.
Really not.
Well, he said yes. Sometimes my vision is blurry. He's got to put eye drops in his eye regularly to make sure it doesn't get too dry. And
he's probably got to tape his eyes shut to go to bed. This is what people with Bell's palsy have to do.
Yes. And he had a very interesting quote. Keith Pompey, our friend from the Philly Inquirer, asked Joel if he ever says, why me? When he's had all of these injuries and he's had an ailment in every single playoffs now.
Oh my God.
And this is a bit of a long quote, but I thought it was worth reading. I say it every day. It's unfortunate. Every single year you start asking yourself questions like why? Every single year, it's very annoying. Maybe it's just meant to be, but you've just got to take it as it is. But the one thing I'm not going to do is give up. No matter what happens, I've got to keep pushing. I've got to keep fighting. I've got to keep putting my body on the line for my family, for this city, for this team. I can't sit back and be like, every single time this happens, I feel bad about myself and go, why me? It goes through your mind and you can ask yourself those questions, but what are you going to do about it? Are you going to quit or are you going to keep going? And if you are going to keep going, what are you going to do about it? The best thing you can do is do the best job possible to prepare yourself every single day, which I've done. And sometimes you get the results and sometimes you don't. But if there's one thing I say about myself, I'm not going to quit. And no matter what happens, if I win, if I don't, just know that at the end of when I'm done, I'm going to be proud of myself and my people are going to be proud of me.
Wow.
Joel Embiid is the most interesting person in the NBA, and it is not close. Sometimes it's for incredible play. Sometimes
I'll nominate Ant Edwards for that, but certainly circumstances
are
not comparable.
Every single day, there's something going on with Joel Embiid. Every time I come here, something happens. Something. In this game today, there were 17 things.
The man is coming off of the knee, which he's got an unbelievably long and unfortunately timed injury history.
Yep.
He is.
Hey, real quick. You know that he has, I know Bontemps knows this, he's covered it. He has twice. Two different occasions, years apart, missed playoff games with orbital fractures.
Yeah.
That's happened two different times in the playoffs to him.
Yeah. Not to mention he's missing the first 2 years of his career because
of course.
Of foot stuff. And so he's got the injury that he's coming back from and looks remarkable given the circumstances. They lose an absolute heartbreaker with Daryl Morey filing his annual referee grievance in the postseason.
And by the way, Joel, after the game, repeatedly guarantees they're going to win the series. He then comes out in the first quarter of this game, nearly gets ejected in the first quarter on a borderline flagrant one or flagrant two.
Well, hold on,
two.
We're going to get to that.
I know we are. I'm just saying. They're down at halftime. He guarantees they're going to win. They're down at halftime. He has this crazy first half. He gets 3 fouls in the first half.
You're going way too fast as usual. As usual, you're going way too fast. Stop.
Brian, we're going to go through all of it individually. I know.
Stop.
It's fine. We're going to talk about it all.
Just stop. McMahon, go ahead.
Okay. Thank you for interrupting me for no reason. But great.
I had to.
I know. You know,
for the good of the podcast, it had to be done.
We're going to talk about all of it again. Thank you.
Oh. Take a breath.
Just let's simplify. Injury. 0-2, controversial finish. Guarantee we're coming back. Goes full Draymond early in this game. I mean, he was an absolute flavor.
Well, I want to stop you. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, now you're going to interrupt McMahon for saying all the things
I am. I am, because I just want to I want to stop real quick. Game two was an absolutely once in a generation heartbreaking defeat. I am not sure that almost any team could come back from that, especially since it put him down 0-2.
Mm-hmm.
If it had put him 1-1, or if it had, you know,
I
later
told you on the pod the other day, the Sixers felt good.
I know, but they felt good after a heartbreaking loss where the star player had Bell's palsy. This has not been computed until now that he was saying that we're going to win the series. He can't close his eye. He's looking down. He's got Bell's palsy. He's shooting 38% for the series because he's obviously being affected by all these things, and he guarantees a win. Now, obviously, that can just be brash confidence, but that is wild. And
well, yes, this is why Joel Embiid is the most interesting person in the NBA. This is what happens all the time.
And then almost gets himself kicked out of a game and then goes on to have one of the best shooting performances ever by a 7-footer in a playoff game.
No,
in
one the of the first best quarter, shooting performances ever, period.
Yes. And let me just say this. The grievance that has been filed with the league, to quote Mikhail Prokhorov, is hereby canceled.
There is no grievance. There is no grievance.
I know it's just an annoying thing that they said. So I'm going to use it against them.
Okay, that's fine.
But the 76ers' complaints about being wronged have been canceled.
Heck of a 2-minute report.
Because Joel Embiid tackled Mitchell Robinson, put his arms around his legs, and dragged him down.
You know what, though? I'll say this, Daryl Morey is going to print out that. He's going to blow up that last 2-minute report, print it out, and he's got a big hole where that James Harden painting used to be. So he's going to put it right in that same frame. He's right.
Don't you think that James Harden painting is still there?
It's worth a lot of money.
I would assume it is, but I don't know. Do you want me to ask Daryl next time I talk
yes,
to him?
Yes, I do, actually.
I will. I'll ask him next time I talk to him. I'll report back.
He tackled
I talked
Mitchell
to him
Robinson.
Today. It didn't come up.
Yeah, exactly. And his answer on that, I was trying to protect myself. Dude, listen, I think Embiid, he was very frustrated early on. There was a lot of arguing and ranting. That was a cheap play. I mean, the Knicks had every right to be upset about that.
Yes, the officials, I think, Zach Zarb is probably the single best ref in the league right now. He's here with McMahon's favorite, James Williams, and Kevin Cutler. And I think in the first few minutes of the game, they let the game get out of hand. It was obviously going to be a physical game. Every game in the series is going to be. They let a lot of stuff go early on. Tempers got escalated. I'm not making any excuses for what happened at the beginning. Yeah, I'm just explaining. I'm setting it up. First 5 minutes of the game, a lot of stuff happens. Then Joel has this incident with Isaiah Hartenstein. He's running down the court, hits him in the midsection with his knee, kind of drills around him. Hartenstein said after the game, he got caught on Joel's brace. He didn't even really think it was that bad of a play. That gets upgraded to an offensive foul. Then 2 minutes later, this thing happens. It was right in front of me. Joel tried to draw an offensive foul, didn't get called for it. Looked like he got mad that he didn't get another call. Then Mitchell Robinson comes down right on top of him, and then he grabs him, and then he goes down. Now, I don't know if that – it was hard for me to tell if Mitch hurt his ankle on that play or not.
It looked to me like that particular play would have hurt his right ankle because
Embiid grabbed his right leg. It didn't touch his left leg, which is one that has been bothering him. But after
there was another one that there was no call on that it looked like he might have hurt his right cojone.
Wow.
That was also a questionable play.
Okay. Well, we'll get to 1 second. Mitchell Robinson, in case you don't know, hurt his left ankle or left foot in this game. Didn't return in the second half. He's obviously a very important player generating those. And one of the reasons why the Knicks have been dominating the rebounds in this series.
When he came into the game, questionable with left ankle injury management. It's the same ankle he had surgery on in December. He's come back in the last few weeks and he's been playing limited minutes. He's been ramping up a little bit. He was unbelievable in game one. And the combination of him and Isaiah Hartenstein, Hartenstein says they're the best center tandem in the league. I mean, maybe this Dallas tandem would argue with that, but I would probably say these guys are.
Maybe Jokic and whoever the heck they're playing.
Well, sure. I mean, obviously not counting like superstar center and whoever, but you know, I don't think he was trying to say that.
Tag team.
Jokic and, DeAndre Jordan.
Yes. I would still take Jokic.
By the way, have you seen Jokic and DeAndre Jordan's little, I wouldn't call it a handshake. Have you seen it, McMahon?
I have not.
It's very unusual because it doesn't sound like something Jokic would do, but they pretend to give each other like kisses on the cheeks, like you're in France or something. They come up to each other and they air kiss each other on each cheek. And it's just unexpected from the Joker and DeAndre. That's all. Sorry, Tari, to pull it away.
We're going to start calling it the window salute.
Go from hardcore basketball analysis into a smooth discussion about air kisses. Go on. So about Mitchell Robinson's left ankle.
Well, listen, this is a significant thing now because he gets hurt. He was moving terribly in the first half. He ends up leaving the game. And like you said, Brian, obviously going up against Embiid, you need all the bodies you can get. And Precious Achiuwa played fine, but he's much smaller. And Hartenstein is going to get in foul trouble. He got 3 fouls in the first half of this game. He ended up almost foul. I think he ended up with 5. And that's a very significant loss for the Knicks if Robinson's not able to come back in the series.
He left the arena tonight wearing a boot. Now, for all I know, he came in wearing a boot, but
I don't think he did. I mean, he participated. Yeah, I mean,
if he's dealing with the left ankle injury, sometimes even if you're not extra hurt, you wear a boot to relieve it. But I'm just saying, he was seen even wearing a boot.
Yeah, it wasn't good. Also, this play. So we sort of skipped over it, but when this play happened, they go to review it. I thought there was a chance it would be a flagrant 2. I thought it was a borderline call. I would not have put up any argument if it was a flagrant 2.
It would have been controversial, but it wouldn't have been like egregious. It wouldn't have been like, oh my God. It would have been
controversial if it was like Kyle Lowry or Batum or anybody other than Embiid or Maxey. Let's put it like that. It would have been controversial because it would have ejected a star, not because of the call.
That's a fair point. Fair point.
So ultimately, just so people are aware, in case they don't see it, Zach Zarba, the crew chief, there was a pool report with Keith Pompey, asked him, why did you call it a flagrant 1? Just so people know. He said, in this instance, the crew was unanimous, along with the replay center official and Tsoukakis, that this foul was unnecessary, but did not rise to the level of a flagrant 2. And that's why it was a flagrant 1. So they kept him in the game.
And when Nick Nurse was asked about it, he said,
I believe Nick said, I never looked at it.
Yeah, he did the old, I don't remember what the guy is from Hogan's Heroes. I know this is way back. Jackson was -30.
Oh, God. Hogan's Heroes? Are you kidding me?
Well, it's a famous thing. I saw nothing.
Call Casey Johnson, Grandpa KC. You might be Grandpa I Window saw forever nothing. After bringing
There's
up Hogan's Heroes.
1% of our audience will know what the reference to.
Not
I saw
even
nothing.
1%.
Anyway.
Not even 1%.
Yeah, well.
I'm not sure Nick Nurse will know that reference.
I'll bet he would, because that's the act that he pulled.
It definitely is.
He was like, what flagrant? I don't even remember.
It would have been hilarious if Zach Zarba said, you think I'm ejecting a freaking MVP for the first half of a playoff game?
The paperwork from Daryl alone would have been.
My other favorite Nick answer today was when he was asked, were you worried about Joel losing his cool in the first half? And he just said, no. I mean, what else is he going to say?
Were you worried that Joel couldn't?
Yes, I was terrified.
Were you worried about that?
Okay, by the way, one other thing. Joel gets his 3rd foul halfway through the second quarter, and the Sixers are down in the series. They're up a couple points at the time. I was like, well, is he going to risk having Joel out there? He keeps him out there for the rest of the second quarter. He plays absolutely no defense, scores 7 or 8 points, keeps him in the game, but doesn't get any more fouls. And I actually think it sort of helped settle him down because he had to stop being aggressive. Because I think he
was trying. What about the Draymond kick?
That was the Hartenstein play.
The Hartenstein play.
No, yeah. I'm pretty sure the one I'm talking about was a Mitchell Robinson situation. Yeah. This was
he kicked Mitchell Robinson in the groin.
It was very.
I honestly don't remember that play. When was it?
It was after the flagrant 1.
Oh, I mean that was at the other end of the court, so I might just not have seen.
Well,
it.
I mean, like it was a classic Draymond play where he hit him in the groin with by raising up his foot, and you could argue that he was just flinging his leg. I mean,
it was a total. I mean.
I honestly don't remember this play.
It should have been a flagrant foul too, because it was just Embiid completely kicking his leg up for no reason.
Well, once the replay was shown, I was like, "Holy Moses! They're going to look at this and they're going to eject him on a second flagrant.
I mean, there's
the but only, honestly, I don't, I'm not even, I don't think anybody here was aware of this play.
McMahon, I'm not crazy, right? That was like,
no, I'm not arguing with you guys. Right, we're now, we're sitting like, so I mean, I mean, I can't, if you sent it to me, I could see it. I can't really see it through the screen on the computer. I honestly, like, there was all this other talk about stuff here. I don't know if this play.
Yeah, when I say full Draymond, I mean full Draymond.
Well, he was completely out of control in the first half, for sure.
That,
I mean, it was an unnatural. Mitchell Robinson is closing out to him. And
that's literally the Draymond play. That's at the opposite end of the court, and we sit right on the baseline here, so it's sometimes hard to see stuff. I didn't see that even happen.
Right. So, like, the Knicks fans are like, this was an all out assault by Joel Embiid on Mitch Robinson in this game, and he finished the game. Mitch Robinson doesn't finish the game. And, you know, I mean, if you haven't ejected him for the first flagrant, I don't know if it makes it, but I mean, I thought they were going to, they didn't review it, right, McMahon? I don't think they reviewed it.
Oh, just play continued. I mean,
I didn't know that. I honestly did not know that happened.
Well, I don't blame you, because there was a lot of stuff going on.
There's a lot of stuff happening.
No foul play. He shoots it. He pushes off, shoots a jump shot, and, you know, push off. Like, he's physical to get space, shoots a jumper, and his right leg just flails up for no reason.
It's much higher. Higher than normal.
Yeah.
There's a couple legendary Tom Thibodeau quotes after this game, by the way, which I would like to try to say in Tibbs' voice, but I will not do it justice. But now, because I wasn't in there for it, I now fully get the context of one of them, which was, what did you think of the flagrant foul on Mitch? And he goes, which one? The one they called or the one they didn't call?
Okay, right. Go. Yeah, that's exactly
which now I get all the context on it. And then when it's clarified to Tibbs that it's the one they called, he said, okay. I just want to make sure we have clarity on that.
Well, that's what he's talking about, because in all honesty, it wouldn't shock me if the league looked at that and retroactively called that a flagrant.
Right. And the only reason that matters is because there's a flagrant foul.
Well, that's what happened with Draymond.
Yeah, flagrant foul meter.
Well, Tibbs later on said he thought it was the Isaiah Hartenstein play was the other flagrant. So I don't know.
So
I'm reading through the transcript. Yes.
Well, after he sees this, he'll think there were three of them.
As a viewer, I was indifferent on the Hartenstein play, and I thought the Mitchell Robinson blanket was.
I know. But then when he asked the third question, the third Tibbs thing, just to sum this up, was if he thought that was the proper call. He goes, I don't even know. I guess they had 33 free throws? I was like, yes, all right, we're getting the message here of what's going on here. So,
well, yeah, Embiid had 21, he made 19.
Yes.
Which is good.
That's not bad.
I mean, the way he was shooting the ball tonight, he probably could have shot him from the 3-point line and still made 19 of them.
I'm telling you, some of those threes he threw in there, I mean, these are not, you know, these are not corner threes. He was shooting 25-foot shots. Look,
I've said for a long time, Joel Embiid is Kevin Durant plus 80 pounds. Like, it is unbelievable what this guy can do when he gets cooking. And look, I know it was game three of a first round series, but that third quarter he had is easily the best quarter he's ever played in a playoff game, especially when you consider 18 on 7-for-8 shooting. He went 4-for-4 from three. He had a couple assists and ripped the game back from the Knicks, who were up 3 at halftime and were doing all the stuff. It was like, man, like, the Knicks might be able to pull this off. And if they pull this one off today, obviously the series is over. And he came out and, I mean, Josh Hart is still making threes and trying to keep him in it, but puts up a 40-point quarter and slams the door, wins the game. The team had 40 points. All the while dealing with this knee stuff, dealing with the facial stuff, all the craziness in the first half. It was just a completely bonkers. Well,
and here's the thing.
Night.
Jalen Brunson had an absolutely spectacular performance in this game.
His first good offensive performance of the series.
Kind of.
He had 39 and 13. You're saying that's kind of?
Jalen played really. No. Yeah. Jalen played really well. However, he went 13 for 27.
That's like 48%.
I understand. He still ended up taking 27 shots. I think if Jalen's taking 27 to 30 shots a game, I still think it's going to work out pretty well for Philly. If he's pounding the ball into the ground and taking that many shots over and over and over again.
I think the Knicks will be very happy to have 39 and 13 on 27 shots.
I think the Knicks will say, hey, if we score 114 points every game, we'll win the series without any issues.
Yes. I think Brunson, yeah,
the only reason
they're using Oubre and Batum on him to mess with his, to try to mess with the length. And he made the adjustment and made it work. And, you know,
the only reason the Knicks lost is because Embiid went absolutely bonkers and couldn't.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't go that far. You could also argue the only reason the game is competitive because Josh Hart again went crazy from 3-point range. He's now made 12 3-pointers in three games. He made 80 3-pointers all season. So, yeah. I mean, that certainly doesn't hurt either.
All right. And one more footnote to this game. Kelly Oubre wrecked his Lamborghini 2 days ago.
Hate when that
happens. Yes, he did.
And as you may remember, he was hit by a car on the street earlier this season.
Yes, he was.
Bottom of that one.
There was video, but
there was video of him with a bike.
Here's all you need to know.
He cracked his ribs.
Here's all you need to know. After the game today, Kelly Oubre was asked about this and said he was glad everyone was okay. He was fine. There, no one got hurt. And he said, quote, I guess I'd better get a driver.
What about the Hyundai? Hyundai.
I think that person will be getting an upgraded ride.
Yeah. Well,
like you said, everyone was okay, which is great. That's obviously the most important thing. And then he said, I better get a driver.
Well, someone who suffered a rib injury during the season. That's not a joke. And I apparently need.
Also in mysterious circumstances.
Oh, yeah. Agreed. Extraordinarily mysterious.
Like, did you see that video?
How did he do that?
Did you see that video that went viral with that grandma a few weeks ago where she,
yes, I believe we talked about it on the old
misstep on the boat.
Yeah.
I felt jealous of her because she went in the water.
We had this exact same discussion on
I didn't remember that.
Yes, I know you don't.
The
fall can't be blamed for your memory going bad. That's just been going bad for years. So
that's true.
You'll always be our captain.
I remembered, however, I remembered Embiid kicking Robinson on the groin tonight, which you didn't. So just
I never saw it. I literally don't think anybody here knew about it.
Apparently, because it wasn't asked in the pool report, which, I mean, you know, no offense, but that would have been a good question to ask in the pool report.
No one knew about it. That's what I'm saying. The only question anybody had was why probably, wasn't this called
the flavor two? The NFL draft was tonight, but my guess was at least 3 million people watched this game, 2 or 3 million people, and they all knew about it. Okay.
Y'all should have told me.
2-1
for Sunday afternoon, ABC. Sunday night on the next pod, we'll be talking about it.
Will Embiid be able to blink?
Probably not.
That is a jaw. I was relieved because he explained what was going on. So,
we're pretty close to the court here, but not close enough to tell that. All I could see was him. I mean, obviously, I saw the chaos happen in front of me with the Mitchell play, and I wasn't sure if he was going to keep playing. And then I just saw him raining in threes from everywhere. And I was like, this is unbelievable.
It was unbelievable. And this series is already, you could already write a short book on this series and just play three games.
It's been everything I hoped it would be, and then some. And hopefully, there's still four more games to be played.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's the roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. The NFL schedule drops this week, and you can be there to catch all the action live and in person with Vivid Seats. Experience every touchdown, every tackle, every eye-popping play of your favorite team. And to kick it off, Vivid Seats, the official ticketing partner of ESPN, is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP. Download the app or visit vividseats.com today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Now let's talk about the other two non-interesting games that happened on Thursday night. All right. The Lakers are cooked. The Lakers know that they're cooked.
Oh, that was an interesting game.
I actually don't think it was because the game was extraordinarily predictable.
What are we going to call the broom this time? Can't be the bronze broom. It's not the most competitive sweep of all time. Brian has just dismissed them out of hand. What are we going to give them?
Well, here's the thing. This was a 7-point game. The Nuggets won by 7, and it was not a 7-point game.
No. Once the Nuggets came back and took the lead early third quarter, it was like it's over.
But you knew that was going to happen. They outscored the Lakers coming into this game. I have to check and see what the actual score in the second half was. Coming into this game, in the 6 playoff games that they'd played over the last 2 years, the Lakers were plus 17 in the first half, and the Nuggets were plus 52 in the second half. And that was accentuated by what happened, and they blew a 20-point lead in game 2. And, you know, Darvin, the Lakers fans they're out for blood for Darvin Ham. Mm-hmm. And if Darvin Ham loses his job in the next week, the performance in the second half of these games are going to be a big factor. Clearly,
I got some comments on that.
Go on.
I got some comments on that. I've had to hear a lot on this pod over the past couple of months. Ooh. About how good D'Angelo Russell has been, how effective D'Angelo Russell has been.
Well, he was.
Well, yeah. Great. Here's the deal. When the games matter, D'Angelo Russell ain't that good.
He had some good playoff games last year, not against the Nuggets.
He shot, I believe, 31% from 3 for the playoffs and under 40% overall. I can look up the official numbers here in a second. Today,
I can tell you what his shooting percentages were tonight. 0 yeah. and 0 because he had
0 for 7 from the field, 0 for 6 from 3 in the game today.
Well, he made 7 threes in the first half of game 2, and I think he scored 5 points in the next 3 halves.
Look, well, I tell you, if not for those mean refs in game 2, there's no way the Lakers would have blown that 20-point lead. The fact that crying about the referees after blowing a 20-point lead against a team that at that point had beaten them 10 straight times, including 6 straight playoff games, is embarrassing. The refs could play defense along with the Lakers, and they can't beat the Nuggets. I mean, they could have a freaking triangle and 5. And they wouldn't beat the Lakers, depending on the refs. If it's my guy, Tyler Ford, scrappy little guy, he might be able to create some turnovers. But I mean, to cry about the refs after you blow a 20-point lead and on national TV just get your soul ripped out of your body and dangled in front of your face is humiliating. It's embarrassing.
Well, and by the way, I got to keep hearing. I hear over and over again about Darvin Ham's failings as a coach. And Darvin Ham is causing all these problems for the Lakers. And Darvin Ham is the reason this team is not that good. How many two-way players do the Lakers have? They have 2. Well, they have two two-way players on the team.
Well, and one is a three-quarter player because Anthony Davis, and he's not alone, but he is absolutely worn out and worthless in the fourth quarters after dealing with Joker for the first time.
Well, that's not what he feels because he pretty much threw Darvin under the bus after game 2. I mean,
that was classy.
Short of saying the words, this loss was Darvin Ham's fault, he was basically right there. He said, we're disorganized.
You sit there and say, we don't know what we're doing on offense and defense. That's saying it's the coach's fault. Now,
well, I know what he wasn't doing. He wasn't scoring and he wasn't getting any stops. That's what he was doing.
Now I got something else to say. The Lakers had the 17th pick in the NBA draft. He drafted Jalen Hood-Schifino. He has not played. I believe he's now had a knee issue at some point. I believe
it's his back injury.
I apologize. The 18th pick in the draft was Jaime Jaquez Jr. Mm-hmm. The 19th pick in the draft was Brandon Pajemski. Mm-hmm. The 20th pick in the draft was Cam Whitmore. Want to think one of those guys would help the Lakers? How about the fact that they spent money last summer on Gabe Vincent, a guy who has had a knee injury basically all season, has barely played?
Well, it's not their fault that Hood-Schifino got hurt, and it's not their fault that Gabe Vincent.
But before he got hurt, he was not doing anything for them.
Yes.
He was a non-factor all season.
And I also will say, you know, I'm not defending Rob Pelinka, but Rob Pelinka's draft history was actually pretty good. Maybe not the high picks, but the mid to late first rounders and second rounders, he had hit some. Pelinka, I liked Pelinka's chances of drafting well at 17. This particular year, he didn't draft well, and they needed to draft.
The point isn't about the specific pick. Yeah, the point is about the specific pick. The point is, I never hear about the Lakers not having a very good roster. Last July, I had to be told that they had the greatest summer in the history of summers after they had the greatest competitive, most competitive sweep in the history of sweeps. And we're sitting here talking about the same thing happening all over again, and it's all the coach's fault.
That's chill out. Chill out, USWB. Teams that are down 3-0 in series are 0-151, but they've never had the potential of Christian Wood coming back to make his playoff debut in game four. Never happened before. Here come the Lakers with their prized August minimum signing to save the day. Christian Wood putting on the cape, baby.
Going to make all the difference.
All
the difference.
One of the things that's driving the Laker fans crazy is that with the Nuggets being so big, and Aaron Gordon had the best play. And Aaron Gordon's playoff resume is getting more impressive. He had the best playoff game of his career in this game.
All on dunks and layups and putbacks and just dominating around the rim.
And what the Lakers fans are going crazy about is that Darvin played very small in this game where big stretches.
Who is he supposed to play?
Hey, listen, I'm
is
not
he supposed
defending
to play
him.
Jackson Hayes. Is Jackson Hayes going to fix the problem?
The only three guys he played off the bench tonight were Torian Prince, who technically I guess is a power forward, but really he's a wing. Spencer Dinwiddie, who's a buyout guard, and why am I having a brain fart? Gabe Vincent.
I don't know.
Those were the three guys.
Again,
those were the eight guys
again,
he played.
Who
fire,
is he
fire Darvin
to
Ham.
Play?
This is not like you're not fixing.
He's
anything.
Supposed to. I mean. In the view of the fans, he's supposed to play Rui Hachimura and Jackson Hayes. And I know Jackson Hayes has not been good. I'm not defending that. I'm just telling you what people are upset about.
It's easy to blame a coach. What I'm telling you, though, it's pretty sorry when you are a max salary superstar. And again, I'm still worked up about game two because whatever. The series ended when they lost a 20-point lead. Not that they ever had a chance. I did pick Nuggets in four, and it wasn't exactly going out on a limb there. Anthony Davis had no points, one turnover or one rebound, and got the game-winning shot splashed in his face and then collapsed on the Nuggets bench as they partied around him.
That was
and brutal. After that, threw his coach under the bus and cried about the referees. That was his fourth quarter.
LeBron took one question.
Shot in his face.
LeBron took one question, didn't answer it, complained about a call in the third quarter.
Oh my God.
And walked away.
In the third quarter, when they were, I forgot what they were up at the time, but dude,
they're up 10, I believe, 9 or 10.
Lead.
Yeah. Well, and again, to go back to my original point, LeBron James played 71 games. Anthony Davis played 76 games. The Lakers were in the play-in. Okay. The Lakers were in the play-in because their roster wasn't good enough. Because they
and
didn't
D'Angelo
have a good offseason.
Russell had a good second half. Like he played very well.
He was fine.
On.
But
I'm supporting your point.
Yeah, he played 76 games. People act like he's a star. He played 76 games.
he acts like he's a star.
All we hear about is that it's the coach's fault. Same thing in Phoenix. Frank Vogel's fault when the Suns had a 13th ranked defense this year. Okay, like I don't know how they did that. Like the roster isn't good enough. That's the problem. But I never hear that. I just hear about how the offseason was great. The acquisitions are great. Everything is great.
It's always easy to blame the coach, especially if you're the guy who put together a flawed roster. And
let me just say this. If the Lakers make a coaching change, who are they hiring?
I don't know anybody they're hiring who's doing a better job than Darvin Ham has done. I don't see why this team should have been better than it was this year.
Your mentions are going to light up after that because
I mean, that's fine. I mean, the Laker fans already hate me anyway for just speaking the truth about this team for over a decade. So I might as well keep doing it.
You can say like hire Bud, whatever. Like there's a championship coach out there. I'm just saying,
we don't know who's going to be unemployed.
Sure.
It's not responsible to.
It's not going to matter if they don't improve the roster.
They're not hiring a coach who's going to get them to the finals next year. That's what they're not doing.
Yes, unless the roster changes. Unless they add multiple two-way. Again, I've been saying for 2 years now, what the Lakers need to add are two-way players.
Well, they had two-way players and they got rid of them. So that's a retold story many times over, but that is the truth. And here's the other thing. I'm going to say this about just real quick. As the Laker fans, or anybody, just average NBA fans, start to figure out what trade they're going to make this summer that's going to get them a third star, because that will begin, if it's already will begin tomorrow, because this series is
cooked. I'm sure it's begun today. Yes.
It's likely that D'Angelo Russell is going to opt out of his contract. Okay. Because the Lakers gave him a 1 year with a player option. And I would say it's likely he's going to opt out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And once he's a free agent, they can't really trade him. Yes, you could, in theory, do a sign and trade, but if the Lakers are in the apron, they can't receive the player in the sign and trade. So it's unlikely. And LeBron's gunning for a raise, by the way. LeBron's opting out, and he's going to gun for a raise. It's likely that they're not going to be able to execute a sign. Even if there's a team out there that wants D'Angelo Russell, wants to trade the Lakers a star, which is a totally different conversation. If D'Angelo Russell, now if he opts in, that's a different story. I don't know if they can do some mind trick to get him to opt in. So that means that while when you go to your trade machine and you cook up your big trade for star player X, who's going to want to be a Laker, you're going to be able to, you better put Austin Reeves in that trade, dudes, because it's probably going to take Austin Reeves and another piece.
Well, it's Austin Reeves and three first round picks and filler salary. That's which is basically Rui Hachimura, yes, and Gabe Vincent.
And look,
that's
Austin
all
Reeves
salary.
Isn't taking them to the promised land, but just know that that's the asset that teams are going to want.
And he's a good golfer.
And unfortunately, he's about to get plenty of time to play.
No, he is. And I do have good news for podcast listeners outside of Los Angeles. We're only talking about the Lakers for one more game. And then not until the rest of the teams are done playing.
Might not be talking about them on Sunday. There's so many other games.
Well,
might have to talk about it.
Here's the thing about
this game.
We're
doing the obit now.
The fans in the arena knew there was no energy. As soon as the Nuggets played 3 good minutes in the second half, the entire arena, I don't blame them. This is the 11th straight time. They've seen it before. And by the fourth quarter, it was a 4-possession game. But there was zero drama. Jokic was like, I'll just make 3.5 plays. But the big thing is the start of the fourth quarter, Darvin Ham goes all in. He doesn't take LeBron or AD out. Jokic goes and does his rest. Jokic plays the whole third. He goes for his rest. So this is their last stand. When Jokic comes back in, it's 8 minutes or 7 or 8 minutes. The Nuggets had won those minutes by 3 points. And if that's not the final stake, I don't know what is, when you got LeBron and AD out there and they don't have Jokic. And by the way, it's because Aaron Gordon and Michael Porter is having an excellent series as well. So that is what it is.
And by the way, there's going to be talk. I mean, I'm sure we're going to hear talk now that, the Lakers should have tanked because they would have been better off playing against the Thunder, or they'd have beat everybody but the Nuggets. I'm going to tell you right now, Denver ain't sweeping through the playoffs 4-4-4-4, to quote Moses Malone, the great late Malone.
They probably, the Thunder played very nervy in game one, but they were awesome in game two. They absolutely obliterated the Pelicans. Maybe the Lakers would have gotten game one, but the Thunder, I don't know if you've looked at them, but they're, I don't mean you, Bontemps.
No, I know what you mean.
What do you mean, me?
No, I don't mean you either. You've literally looked at
them
many
times.
We mean
Jackson. Jackson hasn't watched them. There's no Syracuse guys on the team.
By the way, Jackson brought these stats for us. During the Lakers' 11-game win streak over the Nuggets. Sorry.
All the way around.
The Nuggets' 11-game win streak over the Lakers. Jokic, 27-14-11.
Ho-hum.
Yeah.
That's what he does.
Well, what I was going to say was, it doesn't matter. To me, that doesn't matter, because this was the Lakers' best chance to try to beat these guys when LeBron was fresh and AD was fresh.
Yeah, and they had days off.
And if you're, to me, the Lakers, obviously, they're all about winning championships, right? They've tied with the Celtics for the most in NBA history. That's the standard.
No.
Win championships.
They have the most now because they have that in-season.
That's right. They have the in-season. They have the in-season.
That banner is up there.
So they're one ahead of the Celtics. But if the standard is we're a championship level team, we're going to win championships. When you have LeBron, when you have AD, that's in theory what you're trying to do. Denver's the standard. So the standard is you've lost 11 times in a row to the best team. So that alone should tell you there's a pretty damn big gap
Yeah.
Between the two teams. And it ain't the coach. That's the gap.
And by the way, now the Lakers could not make an outside shot in this one, largely because Russell was awful and LeBron didn't shoot it well either.
Well, neither could Denver.
AD has had a spectacular statistical series. Now, he was absent in the fourth quarter in game two, and he didn't do much in the fourth quarter of this one. And you can.
That seems kind of relevant.
I know, but he went for 33 and 15 in this game on 14 of 23 shooting. LeBron goes 26, 6 and 9 on 12 of 20 shooting. And even Austin Reeves played really well, 22 points on 8 of 17 shooting. Okay, Russell had a bad game, but like that's got to be enough.
Don't stat me up on AD. You know, Adrian Peterson was AD because it stood for all day. He could go all day. This AD, almost done.
Look, it goes back to that play at the end of game one when Jokic ran away from AD with his hands on his knees, ran past LeBron with a minute to go in the game, got an and one.
That's like, the series.
That's the series. That's the series, and that's the 11 games in a row, 10, whatever the number is. All the losses in a row, 11 losses in a row, that's it right there.
By the way, you want to know a terrifying stat? Obviously, all these stats, shout out to Stats Williams and the Stats and Info group. One of the most frightening stats of these playoffs is the Thunder's 124 points in game two were all scored by guys who are 25 or under. First time a 25 and under group has scored all the team's points in the playoffs. I think the Thunder might be pretty good for a while, especially considering Sam Presti can make a massive splash of a trade whenever he decides it's time.
Or he could just keep drafting players for the next God knows how many years.
Which
in a
is
row.
What they want us to. I take that back. Yeah. Never mind. Let me just say this. The
old Presti okie doke.
You got to start getting 405 calls.
No, don't say that. Don't say that.
OKC okie doke.
Jackson, cut that out. I don't need
Thunder,
it in my life.
On line
don't
one say, and two
don't say
and three
that.
And
Jackson,
four.
Jackson, cut that out. Jackson, cut that out. Let me just say this.
That, one of our biggest fans in Oklahoma City.
That commercial with Shea and Chet is a travesty. And I could only imagine what the outtakes were.
Oh, wow.
Can you imagine what's on the cutting room floor if that's the take they used? And also,
you're going to get
you
banned.
You guys know how I feel about Chet and Shea, okay? And I can't take it. Actually,
you're
going to
be
totally,
banned Bryant soon after this.
I mean, in all honesty,
Chet's an awesome player. I don't know that he ranks real high in the NBA swag ratings.
Chet.
What are we doing here? What are we doing?
Chet has great. Why would Chet allow that commercial to run? Who signed off on that?
He probably got a nice paycheck.
I suspect he got paid a lot of money. Why are we ripping Chet and Shea now? What are we doing?
You know why. Appropriately. And it's
listen,
not even
if AT&T would like to call me and give me money to sing in a commercial.
It's not even so bad that it's funny. It's just
Hey, shout out to Teddy Tumbleson. I'm just my favorite Oklahoman, and I'm trying to avoid angry phone calls from.
Please just don't say that. Just don't
Teddy,
say
that. Huge NBA fan, huge Hoop Collective fan. He's a great kid.
I can't have it in my life.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Now let's talk about the play of the week, the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. All right. There was another game, and it was a game for 4 minutes. The
Cavs Corner. Speaking of sponsors, Cavs Corner. Sponsored by Blowouts.
Nobody.
All you need to know is that the Magic had 9 offensive rebounds. Just to illustrate who might have been ready to play in this game and who might not have been, the Magic had 9 offensive rebounds in the first quarter. They might have been a little bit jacked up to play, and the Cavs might not have been able to match that intensity. It was a 40-point game for a big section of the second half. Paolo Banchero started 6 of 16, which is good, but they kept rebounding his misses. Then he made like 7 out of his next 8, and he ended up with 30 and 10. He's the youngest player in like 18 years to have a 30 and 10, I think since LeBron maybe.
31, 14, 5 assists, no turnovers, plus 28.
And he'd had 15 turnovers in the first 2 games. And he totally cleaned that up. Magic fans were into it. Jalen Suggs, who had that scary knee injury in game 2, had a brilliant game.
All right, hold on. We are going to have the Wizard of the Quiz. I'm stepping in.
Okay.
LeBron 3 times had a 30 and 10 performance at a younger age than Paolo Banchero, who's 21 years, 165 days old today.
Okay.
Who is the youngest player in NBA history to have a 30 and 10 playoff performance? And I'll give you a hint. This is an iconic performance.
Magic Johnson.
You got it. The hint was
game 7.
6, but yeah.
Game 6. Yeah. When he played center for Kareem.
Kareem stayed home.
Yeah.
The captain. All right. Well, going forward in this series.
Yeah. Is Cavs corner concerned after game 3?
This is what they should be concerned about. First off, the Cavs cannot hit an outside shot. They came into this game shooting 29% on 3 in the series. Like, they got those 2 wins, but it was not because they were running good offense. And my God, what did they go in this game?
They went 8 for 34.
That's not
Darius Garland, Donovan Mitchell combined to go 2 for 10.
So here's the thing. In this game, the big adjustment that Jamal Mosley made was that he put Jalen Suggs as a primary defender on Donovan Mitchell. It's curious why he didn't do that from the start. I'm sure he had his reasons, but it didn't work in the first 2 games. Mm-hmm. But in the fourth quarter of game 2, when the Cavs had sort of a comfortable lead, they started double teaming Donovan Mitchell. And the Cavs lost some momentum there, and they only scored like 16 points in the fourth quarter. And even Donovan came out and said, hey, we didn't finish this game the right way. It was easy to forget about that because the Cavs have basically led wire to wire the first 96 minutes of this series. Yeah. But there was some stuff that happened in the fourth quarter. So they brought it back in this game with Suggs as a primary defender, double teaming Donovan, and Donovan was not effective. And if Donovan's not effective and the Cavs are not shooting threes well, their offense sort of gets really knocked down a peg. The other thing is, Jared Allen had been averaging 19 rebounds a game in this series over 2 games. And clearly the Magic were like, that's enough of that. And he only had 8 in this game. And they also, Magic, changed their starting lineup, taking Jonathan Isaac out. And Isaac only played 16 minutes, but was very effective off the bench. So,
well, that was the thing. They've had so much. People probably not watch the Magic bunch this year, but they've had their second unit with him and Mo Wagner has crushed teams all year, and then they switched it and Wendell Carter not starting. Wendell Carter was probably a better option to have on Jared Allen anyway. And by the way, him and Evan Mobley combined to have 10 rebounds because Evan had 2, and the Magic won the rebounding battle 51 to 32 in this game, which is certainly not going to get it done.
Yeah, Mosley, I don't know what he said, but his actions essentially admitted he made a couple mistakes going into the series.
The Magic also were understandably jittery in game 1. They came out.
Yeah, for sure.
They were jittery. And but this performance by Mobley and Allen in this game, getting obliterated on the boards, not having much of a presence, it was a throwback to what happened last year against the Knicks. And it was one of the things that the matchup was somewhat concerning about. So we'll see. The Cavs, I would say this, like, they are not as bad. Like, they are probably, I haven't run the numbers, but they're probably shooting under 25% on threes in the series. They are a better 3-point shooting team than that. They have good 3-point shooters. Max Strus has not been able to make a shot. Garland was just 1 of 4 in this game. Sam Merrill was the only guy, you know, that's one thing. Sam Merrill crushed the Magic during the regular season. He barely played at all in the first two games. He got garbage time minutes in this game and made three threes. So,
well, garbage time is a lot.
Well, that's true. JB basically pulled the plug with 4 minutes left to go in the third quarter, and they were down 40. It was the correct decision. Would not
shooting 24% on threes through three games.
Okay. Would not surprise me if Sam Merrill may get the bounce, may get more minutes, and he could be a factor hitting some threes in game four. Like, that could be the Cavs' like little fourth quarter find. We've already talked about this game too much. One thing I want to talk about before we leave, McMahon, your series shaping up to potentially be a real doozy. You shaped the podcast the other night. You don't even know it.
I listened, baby.
And shaped some of the stuff I talked about on TV the last couple of days, because I was watching the game, but in the ESPN Slack channel, which we should sell subscriptions to, in all honesty, that's my revenue. This note comes in from McMahon about 2 or 3 minutes into the fourth quarter. What is Luka? Well, what did you say? How'd you frame the question?
I asked for what his numbers were, or what the Clippers' numbers were against him as the primary defender. And I don't want to take too much credit, because they put out the stat at halftime. In the first half, they were 1 of 12, including 0 of 8 when he got a contest. And so I asked for that stat to be updated postgame. I asked for it right after that.
I was setting you up to look like the hero, and you just handed it right away.
He's giving credit to the right people. Swiping, like you admitted.
I like to give credit where it's deserved, which is why I never give it to Bond Temps. I asked for it to be updated right after he got that smothering stop on Kawhi Leonard, where Kawhi's ISO'd against him. And he ends up taking a extraordinarily difficult, Luka's all in his grill, contested fadeaway from the baseline. I think it was an air ball. And look, there's
great defense
behind him.
Yep.
Maxi Kleber was all the way on that side of the lane helping. You know, they're obviously shading toward that. I mean, they're connected as a group. But Luka, that was, I think, Luka's best defensive performance of his career. Kyrie was also actually extraordinary defensively. You know, Ty Lue even brought up, like, Kyrie's picking up full court a lot of times. You know, and this was a defense that was the number one defense in the league over the last 6 weeks or so. A lot of that, though, was Daniel Gafford's rim protection. He's been a non-factor in this series. He's dealing with back spasms now. Yeah. Didn't practice today. I can tell you, just seeing him in the locker room and talking to him a little bit after that game, I don't think he could tie his shoes. He was walking super stiff. We'll see. He's questionable for game three. We'll see. But Maxi's been amazing as a small ball center. But it really, like, when Luka and Kyrie are playing that kind of defense, even when the offense is ugly, and it's been a brawl, but they're going to win a lot of games when those guys are locked in like that. And look, Luka's taken great pride in improving defensively this year. And he's been, especially as an ISO defender, he's been very good. You know, 0.76 points per possession in the regular season, which ranks, I think 83rd percentile in the league, so pretty far up there. But especially, he played 46 minutes. Ty Lue called, he said Jason Tibbs because of the minutes. But
he called the timeout in the fourth quarter basically just to let him rest.
Absolutely.
At one point. Yeah.
Yeah. They're trying to give him his, you know, like, trust me, they love those TV timeouts. They called that timeout just to get Luka off his feet for a few minutes. But the Clippers want to attack him as much as possible to try to just take his legs away from him, right? It's not even that he's necessarily a bullseye. It's just they're trying to make him
trying to wear him down. And not just wear him down in one game, but wear him down over seven.
Sure. Yeah. And it didn't work because, again, they were 2 of 17 against him, 0 of 11. When he got a contest, which only in the last 5 years, only Robert Williams in one game has had more contests without allowing a bucket in a playoff.
It's the
game.
First time in history Robert Williams was spoken of in the same sentence as Luka Doncic.
You're getting compared to Big Bob in defensive stats. You're doing something right.
Other than when the Mavs were looking for a center, hey, could you imagine Robert Williams as a lob threat for Luka? Daniel Gafford's done well, so has Derek Lively. And, you know, then Luka just hits an incredible dagger step back three as well.
Like, so he threw it. He threw it in there.
Yeah. And, but I asked Ty Lue, you know, how he felt about the way that they were attacking Luka. Like, you know, what did he think about kind of, obviously it's a priority. What did he think about the process? And he said he thought that their offense got too stagnant because they were so focused on attacking Luka that the offense kind of,
they are one of the league leaders in ISO ball, the Clippers. So it's kind of what they do, but yeah, I see what you're saying. I see what he's saying.
And so it's going to be extraordinarily interesting to see how that works moving forward. Luka is not resting much. He's going to be playing 43, 44, 46 minutes.
It's definitely worth watching, but I would say that performance by the Mavericks was reason to believe in this team. Yeah. I don't know if it's repeatable, but that performance is the type of performance that a championship contending team makes.
Yes. And I would also say it will be fascinating to see how Kawhi Leonard progresses, or whether he progresses as the series goes on. You know, this is a guy who didn't go through a full practice before coming back after taking, I don't know how many days off, but whatever, a month or whatever it was. First half looked rusty, saw some glimpses in the second half. I'm not sure we're going to see, you know, Pete Kawhi in this series. I am pretty sure it will take Pete Kawhi for the Clippers to be able to beat the Mavericks in the series.
Yeah. Definitely worth watching one of the triple header games on ESPN on Friday night. Okay, Bontemps, I-95 is calling your name. Thank you for staying up late. And God knows how much work you did after this game. Thank you to McMahon. Thank you to Jackson, our producer. And thank you for watching, listening to Hoop Collective. We will talk to you next week.
Adios, amigos.